Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for tuning in. Today is episode number 488, and we are covering the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, August 14th, 2026. We have got a really interesting lineup today, heavily leaning into the current state of AI and the web.
We really do. We are going to talk about a new frontier coding model called GLM 5.3 that is showing some wild cybersecurity capabilities. Then we'll look at Qwen 3.8, a new 27 billion parameter local model that is turning heads. After that, we dive into a fascinating blog post asking why Anthropic's Opus 5 actually feels worse to work with than its predecessors. And finally, we'll wrap up with a look at the state of the modern web, starting with a hilarious throwback site from 2020 and ending with the news that Firefox is officially the last major browser standing that supports uBlock Origin.
Let us kick things off with GLM 5.3. This post got over 1,000 points yesterday. The title is GLM 5.3, Frontier Coding with Emergent Cyber Capabilities. This is a new model from Z.AI, and the Hacker News comments were absolutely buzzing about what this thing can actually do in the wild.
Yeah, the capabilities here are pretty staggering. One commenter named Leo Buskin talked about setting up the $18 GLM subscription and throwing it into a red team security scenario. They said it flawlessly executed zero-day exploits in WordPress plugins, remote code execution, and adapted a 6.8 kernel exploit. It even played against another GLM agent acting as a defender.
That is the part that really caught my eye. We are at the point where we can spin up autonomous red and blue teams to wargame against each other on our local machines or through cheap API subscriptions. But what I found really interesting in the comments was the heavy discussion around harnesses. People were throwing around terms like Claude code, open code, Pi, and VT code.
Right. There was actually a whole subthread where someone asked, what even is a harness? Because the terminology has gotten so muddy lately. Is it an IDE? Is it a terminal?
Exactly. A user named ComputerX broke it down really well. The harness is essentially the agent runtime. The large language model outputs text, usually in JSON, asking to execute a command or search and replace a string. The harness is the software that wraps around the model, gives it those tools, executes the commands, and gates the tool use based on security controls.
Another commenter called it a set of artisanal prompts, which I love. But it is true. The same exact model, given a different set of tools and a different system prompt, can behave entirely differently. We are seeing people abandon the expensive $200 a month Claude code subscriptions for $10 a month open code Go harnesses powered by models like GLM 5.3. The open models are just getting that good.
Speaking of open models getting incredibly good, let us move to our second story. Qwen 3.8.27b just dropped on Hugging Face. This is the latest generation in the Qwen open model family, and for a 27 billion parameter model, it is packing a serious punch.
It really is. It is built on the Qwen 3.5 architecture, but it brings massive gains in coding and long horizon agentic tasks. It is also a native vision language model, meaning it understands images and videos out of the box. And the context window is huge. Natively, it supports over 260,000 tokens and can extend up to 1 million.
The Hacker News thread on this was a goldmine for local AI enthusiasts. There was a great comment from a user named C. May, who runs their own private benchmarks. They noted that Qwen 3.8.27b is only the second local model, after Gemma 4, to successfully reason through their private test.
I always find it fascinating when people talk about their private benchmarks, because public benchmarks are so deeply baked into the training data of these models now, the only way to really know if a model can reason, rather than just regurgitate, is to throw something completely novel at it.
Totally. CMay mentioned their benchmark does not require deep world knowledge, but it directly attacks lazy assumptions and poor attention mechanisms. It requires the model to follow instructions even when it runs into errors. But they did point out a downside to Qwen 3.8, which is the VRAM usage.
Right, the memory footprint is apparently quite heavy. CMay said that just 32,000 tokens of context was taking up 2.5 gigabytes of VRAM, making it hard to fit larger contexts even with quantization. They compared it to Muse Glimmer, which is apparently much faster and better at handling huge context windows, even if it doesn't score as high on coding benchmarks.
It really highlights how fragmented the local model space is becoming, but in a good way. You have models like MuseGlimmer that act as great exploratory agents, collating information across massive codebases. And then you have Qwen 3.8, which might meander a bit and use up 10,000 tokens thinking, but ultimately writes better code. You really have to build a tool belt of different models for different tasks now.
Which brings us perfectly to our third story, a blog post by Moon Logadin titled, "Why Does Opus 5 Feel Worse to Work With?" This one clearly struck a nerve, pulling in over 800 points.
Yeah, Sarah, this was a really validating read. The author argues that while Opus 5 is objectively more capable and scores higher on benchmarks than Opus 4.7 or Fable, it actually feels like a downgrade in daily use.
And their reasoning makes a lot of sense. They point out that older models would stop and ask questions if your intent was unclear. They did not make assumptions without checking. Opus 5, on the other hand, just barges ahead, reinterpreting plans and making bold guesses without asking for clarification.
The author blames this on benchmark optimization. To score perfectly on a benchmark, a model has to solve a self-contained problem without asking for hints. So the training process inherently penalizes models that stop to ask for direction. But in real-life coding, you almost never have the entire context, budget constraints, and business logic perfectly documented in the prompt. You want the agent to ask questions.
The comments on this piece were so insightful. A user named Barkle brought up what they called the single biggest annoyance with Opus 5, which is how it writes. They described it as writing too elliptically, orbiting a point and then jumping to it like a revealed insight.
Oh man, another user called that the Claude aesthetic. It is that structure where it rephrases your prompt, gives you three paragraphs with bullet points, adds a twist, and ends with the bottom line. Every single response, whether you are asking about quantum physics or a California burrito, follows that exact same cadence.
It creates this uncanny valley of writing. Someone compared it to a person who constantly uses a specific catchphrase. With a human, it might be a quirky idiosyncrasy that you just get used to. But with an LLM, because there is no actual internal mental state behind the words, it just feels manipulative and exhausting to read.
And it is not just the text responses. Barkle mentioned that they left Opus 5 and Fable working on a hobby app over the weekend, and the sub-agent started copying the verbose comment style of the codebase. By the end of it, the code had a 3-to-1 ratio of comments to actual code. They had to spend a whole day just burning tokens to strip the comments back out.
It is a classic case of Goodhart's Law. When a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. We optimized for benchmarks, and we lost the collaborative, conversational nature that made these coding agents so useful in the first place.
Let us shift gears entirely and talk about the web we are forcing these AIs to scrape. Our fourth story is a link to a satirical page from 2020 called Every Fucking Website. It got over 750 points, which just goes to show how much worse the internet has gotten since it was published.
This site is brilliant. You open it, and you are immediately hit with a massive banner about COVID-19, a newsletter pop-up offering 10% off, a giant cookie consent banner that you cannot easily dismiss, and a little robot chatbot sliding in from the bottom right corner.
It is funny because it is true, but the Hacker News comments were quick to point out everything the satire missed that has become standard in the last 6 years. A user named JCHW joked that the site loaded too fast and was missing the unrelated autoplaying video that follows you down the screen when you scroll.
Yes, and the absolute worst offender, which multiple people brought up, is the undismissible Try the App banner on mobile.
Oh, I hate that so much. You click a link to Reddit or Instagram on your phone, and the entire page is obscured by a prompt forcing you to the App Store. One commenter mentioned how Instagram will play the video you clicked on, but mute the audio and cover half the screen until you download the app.
A user named Sanzig pointed out that companies have to be pushy about the apps because it is the only way they can install the tracking methods they want to use. The browser sandboxes have gotten too strict, so they need you on the native app to harvest your data. It is a really hostile user experience, and it just makes you want to close the tab entirely.
Which is a perfect segue into our final story of the day from PC World. Firefox is now the last major browser that still supports uBlock Origin.
This is the end of an era. Google's transition to Manifest V3 is finally taking its toll. Microsoft Edge, Chrome, Brave, Opera, all the Chromium-based browsers are locking out the architecture that allows uBlock Origin to do its job effectively.
If you are on a Chromium browser now, your only option is uBlock Origin Lite, which has fewer features and just is not as good at blocking ads and trackers. Safari and DuckDuckGo do not support the full extension either, so Firefox is literally the only major browser left without compromises for ad blocking.
The Hacker News crowd was very vocal about this. One of the top comments pointed out something I actually did not know. Firefox is the only browser that manually vets uBlock Origins code on every single update. Because it is on their recommended extensions list, Mozilla staff actually review it to ensure no malware or spyware has been slipped in.
That is a huge security benefit. But of course, this being Hacker News, there was a debate about whether Mozilla should just bake ad blocking directly into Firefox. Some users argued that relying on an extension is a weakness, while others pointed out that if Firefox blocked ads by default, websites would just start blocking Firefox users entirely.
And there is the trust issue. A user named Plant said they do not want baked-in Firefox ad blocking because they do not fully trust Mozilla not to allow their own acceptable ads or telemetry. Having an independent developer build the blocker and Mozilla act as the reviewer creates a nice separation of powers.
It really does. There were also a lot of shoutouts to the Lady Bird browser project in the comments. People are hoping that as Lady Bird matures, we will finally have a viable third browser engine to compete with Chromium and WebKit. But until then, it looks like Firefox is the undisputed king for anyone who actually wants to control what loads on their screen.
It is a good reminder to maybe switch your default browser if you haven't already. Well, that is all the time we have for today. It's fascinating to see how the push for better AI coding tools is colliding with the absolute mess that is the modern web.
It really is. Thanks for listening to HNPod. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend. We'll be back tomorrow to cover the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day.